Closer to the witching hour of 3 o'clock this afternoon. I know on a beautiful day like today, Mother's Day as well, you're probably not really locked in on, hey, I got to get to a TV to watch the lottery in the NBA. But this is going to be massive for the Wizards. They can fall no further than four, but, you know, getting in the top three would be really, really nice. And, by the way, winning the 1-1 would go a long way. We'll talk more about who are considered, what the experts consider both the strengths and the weaknesses of the big three and who those are in the upcoming NBA draft. Welcome to Hour 2 here on Sports Sunday. I am Steve Zabe, and you can reach me on Twitter at Zabe, Charlie Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. You can also listen to my podcast. It drops 5 days a week. It's called The Zabe Cast, spelled like my name. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you're going to hear from the Capital Golf Gang boys. I do a golf podcast once a week that is sort of focused on golf in our area, the DMV. And I was out at the LIV event on Friday. I had not been to a LIV event. I said, I better get to this one because it looks like the league is folding. I want to see what it's all about. I have thoughts and observations. But it's not looking like a very thrilling finish out there today because Lucas Herbert of Ripper GC, the Australian team, is up 6 on Sergio at 17 under par. And the next closest guy is 10 shots back in Richard Bland, my favorite random LIV Tour player, old Dick Bland. 10 shots back. Only Sergio, you know Sergio, stands between Herbert and the win today. But that's for a little bit down the road. Let's get to this front and center. The NBA has a myriad of problems. Or challenges, let's say. I don't want to call them problems. The league is overall extremely healthy. Franchise values have never been higher. Television ratings are not as good as they were under the peak Jordan days, but they're never going to be. Players are being compensated incredibly well. There is labor peace, and the new stars are starting to rise up and take over for this generation of fading stars. By the way, tomorrow night, 10:30 tip in LA, Lakers trying to avoid the sweep. You know that LeBron has not said specifically he is coming back again next year. But the assumption is, well, of course, in theory, technically speaking, tomorrow night could be LeBron James's last game in the NBA. I don't believe that for a second, but I just needed to point it out that he hadn't said he's coming back for sure. You know who else has not said he's coming back for next year? And he was in Pittsburgh this past weekend and did not meet with the team. That's right. Aaron Charles Rodgers, Aaron. It's kind of assumed by the Steelers and their brass and their new head coach, Mike McCarthy, that they're going to have Aaron Rodgers back. But he's playing the game yet again. But I digress. So the NBA has a number of challenges. Even though they're a healthy league, they've got a number of things that are rubbing fans the wrong way. And I think one of the central things that people have a big problem with is flopping. And it's gotten not just so bad and rampant, but it's gotten very sophisticated. And the Oklahoma City Thunder have perfected multiple forms of flopping. And it's very frustrating to watch, and it's driving the rest of the league crazy. Now, there are some Thunder fans out there, maybe one or two, are going to be screaming at their radios right now going, oh, typical whine, can't beat us, so you got to whine about the refs. How many free throws did they shoot last night, Zabe? Only 10. SGA only had 7 free throws. He also didn't shoot the ball very well, which is another indication of, yeah, he's probably getting too much of a whistle. Somebody had an incredible stat. Let me just scroll up to it right here. In terms of the next closest player, okay, I think this was on Fox Sports. SGA over the last two seasons, including the playoffs, has had 1,552 free throw attempts. The next closest player is 425 free throws behind. In terms of fouls drawn, last two seasons plus the playoffs, 1,073. Also most in the NBA. The next closest guy with fouls drawn, 94 fouls behind. So that's like almost a 10% delta between the top guy in SGA and the next guy, which statistically shows you something is out of whack. There is no way that he is truly that good. He is very, very good, silky smooth, very crafty, great body control. But come on, man. And like I said earlier in the show, on Friday night, basically, J.J. Redick was like, I don't care if I get fired, or I don't care if I get fined. He wouldn't get fired. Go ahead and find me. I'm going to say it like I want to say it. These calls are ridiculous. So I see all the cut-ups and the explanations by people on social media of the ways that the Thunder draw fouls, and it is insidious. The leg kick-out fall down on jump shots has got to be stopped. It's just got to be. That should be the easiest one to stop calling. Also, when guys drive and they're met with any kind of contact, even phantom contact, the move is to make sure to launch yourself in the air, off balance, and by all means, never finish standing on your feet. Always go to the floor. Always go to the ground. Also, the Thunder and other teams, it's not just them, but they're clearly the best. The Thunder has figured out a way to, you know, you get engaged with a rebounder under the basket. Arms are locked. Both guys are holding on to each other. And then you hold on tightly and you essentially pull the other player onto you. And so it looks like you're being pushed to the ground. Now, I understand calling this stuff accurately in real time by the referees at full speed is a very challenging thing. But I have two things to, I think, nip this in the bud. Basketball. Very unethical. Because you're tricking the referees. And you're driving specifically to the basket to not make a layup or to not get an open look. You're doing it because I know I can trick the refs. Watch this. Oh, foul, whistle, free throw line. My two proposals are very simple, and there have been people saying they need to fine the players. Announce after the games, once they've had a chance to look at it in slow motion and replay, okay, we got a level one flop on so-and-so, on Alex Caruso, that's a $10,000 fine, and then start ramping up from there. So the first fine is 10 grand, second fine is 50, third fine is 100. Well, there's two problems with that. Number one is it would have to pass agreement by the union. Good luck on that. Secondly, unless you make the fines really, really steep, then these guys don't care. They are making, on average, I've forgotten to check the average NBA salary, but the top stars are making $75 million a year. Like, they're not going to be dissuaded by 10 grand. Also, and here's the other part of it, the other part of it is it's hard sometimes, even when you're looking at it in slow motion, to really determine who did what to who. So my two-part solution is very simple. Number one, you got to start suspending the referees. The referees have got to be put under the microscope. They've got to be reeled in. It's like you watch a game and you see the flops, you see the leg kicks, you see the guys going to the floor like a kid who has been denied candy by his mom at the supermarket, and you throw your hands up going, I can't, how do you fall for that? Literally, how you're standing right there. I'm at home. I can see that was a flop. The league needs to really emphasize to its referees and start suspending them or taking away their assignments to playoff games if they can't call it right. And the second thing they've got to do is just stop calling this stuff. Let guys bitch and moan and fall to the ground and throw their hands in the air. Oh, my God. In fact, my dream rule would be if they call a foul and you don't stay on your feet, then guess what? The foul is rescinded. In other words, the only way to get a foul call is to not flop, is to not go to the ground. I know. You're saying to yourself, that's insane, Zabe. Now guys are going to be taking dudes down like it's Kurt Rambis back in the 80s, clotheslining them. No. No, I don't think you would see that. You would just see players who get incidental contact, who might get bumped, staying on their feet more, and it would look a lot less like a foul because it's the falling down that sells it. So they got to stop calling this stuff. They got to clamp down on the referees and start suspending their asses because they're just being tricked too easily. And then if you want to get radical, you got to do something radical. Because SGA having 425 more free throw attempts than the second most guy in the last 2 years is absurd. Same thing as having 94 more fouls drawn than the second most guy. It's not sustainable. It's a huge turnoff. And I want to like OKC. I want to be a fan. They are a really good team. They don't have to win this way, but this is also their MO. And they're 7-0 right now, and they look like they're rolling. LeBron James, last game in NBA history tomorrow night. I doubt it, but I'll be tuning in just to see how it goes if they end up getting swept. Coming up, the LIV is dying. What's next? The Capital Golf Gang boys will join me, talk about it, and more. You're listening to Sports Sunday on a Mother's Day 2026 on The Fan. Shout out good news. Dick Vitale tweeted yesterday, received great news from my oncologist that results of my MRI on my head yesterday showed that zero cancer had spread to the brain. Now praying that the immunotherapy wipes out the melanoma on my lungs and liver for the Live Tour in the Media Center this week, both in Virginia at Trump National, D.C., as well as in various other interviews and outlets. And I went
out there Friday.
I went out there Friday, and I enjoyed the heck out of it, given the way it was conceived. Their slogan was, golf, only louder. And they had music, and they let the players wear shorts, although not many wearing shorts on Friday because it was cool down by the river. And they built the league based on, look at all this money we have. We have an infinity money. But the infinity money has dried up and run out. And now what could be left of the tour might be some zombie version of Live, and that would present some real nightmares for guys still under contract like John Rahm. That's where we pick up the conversation with the Capital Golf Gang boys, John Ronis and John Gould. You can get the full podcast wherever you get your podcast, but it was quite the week at the Media Center. We got three things to plow through. Do you want to start? Where do you want to start on those three?
Well, I think we got to start with Ted Turner, don't we? I mean,
now let's talk about some of the quotes. Start with Scott O'Neill. He did his best to keep up a positive vibe. This is their first U.S. event. Do you think O'Neill is winning any hearts and minds or billionaires to come save this league at this point?
I can't imagine he is, no.
What's he selling?
He's selling like, hey, we're going to make a business of this.
Yeah, no.
Hey, here's a business that $5 billion over 4 years couldn't fix, but your money is going to be the magic.
No, we're going to shift it. We're going to make it more nimble. We're going to make it EBITDA positive, as DeChambeau said the Crushers are.
It's not going to take $1 billion a year. It's only going to take a half a billion a year. Just fork it over. Yeah,
right.
I don't think so.
Okay. So he gave, I think, he tried to put on the bravest face. DeChambeau catching some U.S. media for the first time pretty much all season because they've been overseas. Other than the Augusta, right?
The majors, yeah.
Yeah. He uncorked a wild one in which he said in the span of literally three paragraphs. On the one hand, he said, hey,
it'd be really unfortunate if they don't want me back on the PGA Tour, especially with everything I could do for them. And then two paragraphs later, he says, well, everyone needs to drop the egos. And then goes
exactly
rant about how, you know, the PGA Tour is not doing that good. Sure, they got the media behind them, but they're eliminating events. They're shortening fields. They're laying off staffers. That apparently did not go over well on the PGA Tour from those that heard that. Then you had Graham McDowell say that he regrets saying he was joining LIV to, quote, grow
the game. Yeah. That was always a good one, but at least he's honest now.
Yeah, I guess at least he's honest now. Anubhav Lahiri said something that just blew me away. He said that, yeah, I like my time on tour, but some of the financial aspects of the tour left me disillusioned, but refused to give specifics. And I'm like, okay, what are you talking about? You play golf, a niche sport, for a living and make millions. And you made millions on the PGA Tour. I'm sorry you were disillusioned. Maybe you should be teleported back to 1976 and to be driving in a smoke-filled Buick with Roger Maltby driving from El Paso to Chattanooga, yeah, chasing checks and having a Monday qualify. Disillusioned. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's probably the insult of having to pay for his own hotel and travel between events that got him there.
John Rahm was asked about, do you think there's any way out of your contract? And he said, well, I don't know much about it, but I've got good agents and they've got lawyers, and I don't see many ways out at this point. He sounded resigned and defeated. He also came to an agreement with the DP World Tour.
He did.
A settlement, yeah, in which he agreed to 5 tournaments, not 6. And he's going to pretty much pay the same fines as everybody else.
Yeah.
They should have held him to 6.
Probably should have. He's going to need.
Yeah, they would have had some leverage, but yeah.
Then on the PGA Tour side, Scottie Scheffler snapped at a question right after his round. Was it at Doral or was it his first round of practice round at Wells Fargo?
I think it was at Doral because he had just gotten off the course, is what he said. I just got off the course.
Yeah, he was asked a live question. And he was like, okay, what do you want from me? I just got off the course, right, which became instantly memeable for guys saying, this is every dude getting home to their wife Saturday after being at the club. What do you want from me? I just got home from the course. Rory, though, today, after Friday's round at Wells Fargo, was, am I calling it the wrong thing? Is it the Truist? It's the Truist, right?
It's the Truist now, yeah. Truist
now, different bank. Same course, different bank, down there at Quail Hollow. Rory was pretty direct in saying, look, if you don't want to play this tour, that says more about you, because this is where the best players in the world are. This was a direct shot at DeChambeau, who said as well in the various interviews he did this week, I would like to play any tournament that wants me.
And otherwise spend my time on YouTube, right?
Me. It's been a week, hasn't it?
Yeah. And Rory, it was great. Yeah.
Thoughts on
telling what it is
from
people. Don't be chicken.
Yeah. Ronis?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, as far as Scottie Scheffler goes, you know, I think Scottie Scheffler learned a little bit from Rory getting too deep in the comments about the LIV when it first came out there, and he wants to concentrate. He's got a major coming up. I don't think he's playing in the Truist this week.
He's not,
which is interesting. It's an elevated event, but so, you know, and he's been a little bit snippy, but in a very lighthearted way, he's been snippy. I mean, he's not like crushing these guys. Rory has flip-flopped like a fish out of water. So, you know, whatever he says, it's the du jour. So, you know, it is the way it is. It basically, DeChambeau said, look, there's a few things that have to happen. One, they have to want me to come back and play. Two, they have to allow me to do my YouTube stuff. And then there was a third one that I didn't want to read the rest of the article. So, you know, that's really what's going on with that. And DeChambeau, when people, you know, you get the extremes on both sides. Well, DeChambeau doesn't move the needle anyways. No one cares about him. And then the other people are like, you know, he's the greatest thing in the world. He is somewhere in between. He really is. He definitely is wanted back on the tour by the average fan.
And by Rolap, I think.
Yeah, and I think he'd be good, you know, to get back on the tour. But, like, for these guys to come out and start to actually make a demand, kind of like Rom did on the DP Tour, is asinine. So hopefully, you know, they'll come to some conclusion. But I really think it's already there. The blueprint's there. Stick to the blueprint. Hold your guns there and just say, look, here's your way to get back on it. Reed and Brooks Koepka did it. You go ahead and do it also.
Yeah, he's not going to want to pay, though. He's going to want them to beg him to come back. And I just don't. That's where, you know, he says everybody else's ego has to come down. That's from a guy that won't lower his own ego. You know, that's part of the problem there.
He's one of the more narcissistic people in the sporting world. And that's saying a lot in sports.
Yeah, somebody pointed out that, you know, his whole reinvention act that I was big on, and Ghoul, you would sit there as we taped the show a couple of years ago, and you would look at me with just the most wry-eyed smile, like, I can't believe Zabe has fallen for this. I thought he was smarter than this. And now he's
You were right.
Now he's
totally right
yet again. Joel Beal, and I sent you this article. This Joel is a very good golf writer, and he writes for this was filed for golf.com. I think it's golf.com, not Golf Digest. I'll look at it in a second here. I sent you this piece. It's a long piece about essentially the DeChambeau problem. Because what we're down to now is the DeChambeau problem. That John Rahm's a better player, arguably, although maybe they're 1A, 1B, whatever. Nobody cares about him. He's not American.
No.
He doesn't have a YouTube channel. Right. So DeChambeau is now the one, I don't want to say prized asset in foreclosure with Liv, because I don't think anyone is that prized. I don't think even DeChambeau moves the needle that much, but he's the one guy that you'd go, okay, we'd be good to have him back, right? Even more than Rob, I believe.
I think the most one that people would want.
Yeah,
the
most coveted asset. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. There you go. Coveted asset would be a good way to put it. Beal lays out a myriad of problems and of interesting situations with DeChambeau in particular, starting with the fact that this dipshit sued the tour. He was one of the 11 Liv guys who put his name on a legal document that cost, I believe I read the figure to be $50 million to the tour in legal fees.
Wow.
50.
Yeah.
It's expensive before they finally came to the agreement and dropped it. Is it 50 or 5 million? It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And not only did he put his name on the lawsuit, but he also lied about when he had joined and signed with Liv.
Right.
That it was only after he gave a deposition in the legal proceedings did he have to admit, yes, technically I signed with Liv on this date, and then there's interviews at a subsequent date in which he's claiming, no, I'm not leaving. So the rest of the tour players look at him like a gigantic liar. So that doesn't help his case either. Then there's the whole thing about how, you know, before he left for Liv, he was kind of a pariah. He was a joke. He was the kid who was getting bullied by Brooks Koepka. And for whatever reason, people weren't liking him on the PGA Tour. And so
I got a few reasons.
I mean, comments like that Augusta's a par 68. I mean,
cocky.
You seem to have no reverence for the tour itself and for the people playing
on the
tour.
He was the skinny kid with the stupid Hogan cap, and then he bulked up like a blimp. You know, there was a lot of things that were not likable.
And so
I was at the head of the line.
I know. And so what Beal writes is that DeChambeau's not really that excited to go back. If they told him you can come back to the PGA Tour tomorrow for free, the way Beal sees it is DeChambeau wouldn't be thrilled, because
He certainly isn't liked there, obviously. And he's in a weird spot. So it's very fascinating to me.
You think that, like from what I read in this article too, it almost seems like he wants to be asked back to be on the tour. He wants to be persuaded
and
to come back
to the tour.
He wants
him to pursue him for his YouTube, you know, channel.
Whatever.
You're
going to
help us
that
market.
Special. You
know, right. Yeah. Yeah. For everything I could do for them. There is a greater than zero chance that a Zombie Live tour survives and ensnares legally the services of guys still under contract like Rom.
Yeah, like Rom.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a huge nightmare for him.
Yeah, can't get out, and it's even worse than it is now.
Right.
So it'll be a disaster.
DeChambeau's
just like selling snow cones and hot dogs on the fairways. I mean, it'd be a disaster. Someone running out with egg cartons full of balls that they found in the pond. And Rom having to stop for a lemonade stand. Yeah, I can see that in Thailand. I mean, that's where that tour is going to.
As a kid.
Playing on Munis.
The imagery, I love it. Yeah.
A little table. On one side are Pro V1s and an egg crate. The other side is Cobra meat.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Pro V1s, orange Pro Staffs, and monkey brains. That's what we're going to have in Tibet. Yeah. It's good.
It's like Rom's under contract. But that ball goes high at altitude, or goes long at altitude.
Grow the game, baby. Grow the game.
Get the full episode, Capital Golf Gang, wherever you get your podcasts. I know this, as Andrew Brandt likes to say, there will be lawyers. Coming up, three flavors of possibly great NBA players at the top of the draft. I'll share what the experts are saying and get on record myself. The lottery today at 3 o'clock. Let's keep our fingers and our legs and our toes crossed for Les Wizards. Good news for Warrior fans. Steve Kerr has signed a 2-year contract extension exactly 3 weeks after deliberation over should I, shouldn't I, how much is left of the Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Warriors. That's good news for Warrior fans. Could be bad news for the rest of the NBA if this tweet is funny. It's actually from Bill Simmons himself. He says, happens one day before the 2026 lottery. Conspiracy Bill on high alert. Now, look, the Warriors, as the 11th placed team in the lottery, have the fourth worst odds to land the number one pick. Just 2%. 2%. 2%. So you're saying there's a chance. If somehow the Clippers, with a new contract, Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, Draymond Green hanging on by a thread, and the chance to add, say, an A.J. Dibansta to give this legacy product a little bit more life, oh, if this were to happen today, it would be one of the dirtiest deeds the league has ever done.
What are you talking about? They can't rig the lottery. They have representatives in the room, and they're pulling the ping pong balls. Everyone watches.
Well, we don't get to see the public. But yeah, they pull a selection of ping pong balls with numbers on them to correspond to 4-digit winning numbers on a spreadsheet that are assigned to each team. And when a team wins multiple times, like, all right, you already won the second pick or the first pick, your number came up again. Yeah, no, we're going to throw that away. The more complicated the process is, the more easily riggable it is, if you ask me. But we'll see. We'll see. We're hoping the Wizards just win it outright, clean, over Indiana and Brooklyn, the three teams that have the best chance, 14% odds, and away we go. And then, yes, for the record, I would want A.J. DiBenedetto. Here's what the experts are saying about the top three guys, DiBenedetto, Darren Peterson of Kansas, and Cameron Boozer, the legacy product for Duke. DiBenedetto, 6'9", wiry, explosive, a top-tier scorer with elite positional size and strength. He's viewed as a wing scorer and superstar with the ability to drive winning franchise-wide. Had a stellar freshman year, strong close to the season, high-level offensive toolkit, including a number of mind-blowing highlights. The problem is, as good as he was, BYU wasn't that good. So how good is DiBenedetto if he himself couldn't lift BYU to a higher level? It's a fair question. Areas for growth on DiBenedetto: continued improvement in ball handling, perimeter shooting, and consistent individual defense. He is widely projected as the number one overall pick. Widely projected, but I would argue not consensus. Darren Peterson kind of began the year out of Kansas as the expected 1-1, but had a very, had a very confusing year for many observers, wondering, is he just trying to protect himself for any little injury, any little hamstring tweak, any hangnail to say, I can't play, pulling himself out of games? I mean, at times, Bill Self looked like he wanted to pull his hair out because he couldn't figure out what's going on with my superstar that I've got on rental for all of 5 months. But you got to remember, an NBA career is long, and an NBA team and teammates, they don't care what happened in college. They just care about, what do you got? What are the goods? And the goods on Peterson are incredible. Explosive, versatile. He's a shooting guard with a point guard's mind, elite scoring ability, often compared to high upside NBA playmakers. Can finish at the rim, strong three-point shooter, high-level basketball IQ. The areas for growth include that uneven season, at Kansas, with some concerns over consistency and cramping. Well, the cramping could be fixed with some bananas and water, couldn't it? Cameron Boozer, 6'9", Duke. Dominant physical presence and efficient scorer and rebounder, often called the most productive player in college basketball. Very efficient scorer, 58.2% from the field. Elite rebounder, averaging 22 points and 10 boards per game. The area for growth and the concern for NBA scouts is, some are wondering, can he extend his shooting range just a bit and improve his perimeter skills to fit the modern power forward role in the NBA? That college basketball, he was great. The NBA is a different game, almost a different sport altogether. Where does Boozer fit in the pro game? I, like the experts, am a bit concerned. Still consensus top three prospect, often ranked at number three. That's what the experts say. Let's hope the Wizards win this thing and get their pick of the litter. Coming up next hour on Sports Sunday, abbreviated hour, but I've been able to pin down my ma. And my ma and I are going to go through what I have listed, at least on my little notepad here, the top five sports moments or memories for the sandy-haired boy from McLean, Virginia, with his mom growing up on the mean streets. That'll be just after 11 a.m. You're listening to Sports Sunday on The Fan. We're back. Welcome back to Sports Sunday here on The Fan. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms and grandmas out there. And if you are going to get some time today with yours, definitely cherish it. I'm going to call my mom here in just about 50. Quick follow-up. I meant to loop back to this in my talk with the golf boys. I said, I think the tour spent $50 million on legal fees while getting sued by the LIV and by 11 golfers who put their name to it. And I was like, eh. When I said it, I'm pretty sure I was like, I think I overstated that. $50 million. Oh, yeah. It was $50 million. According to the internet and the AI Google Gemini overview, as of in legal fees, fighting LIV Golf. What the LIV spent suing is unknown, but the PGA Tour had to disclose their financials, given their status as a 501(c). And Jay Monahan, then the commissioner at the time, said, look, it's unsustainable to continue fighting a foreign government with unlimited money. They had already burned through $20 million in legal filings in 2022 alone. So, yeah, you can imagine if players on the PGA Tour are sitting there going, you know, this is our money, the tour. Like, the tour is going to have to take this money from somewhere. They could be putting this to tour purses or better courtesy cars or who knows what. And instead, they're being sued by the Saudis and by you guys. Yeah, I'd be pissed. Yeah, I wouldn't really want to welcome you back if your dumb league folded. Also, and this is just a little sliver segment before I close out the hour, this has nothing to do with sports, but I am a aviation, not fanatic, I'm an aviation enthusiast. I don't fly nearly as much as some people do, who fly for work all the time and probably wish they would never have to board another flight again, but I like flying when I do. It's fun, assuming the weather is good and there's no mechanical delays and all the other headaches that come with flying. But it's crazy to me what's happened with several near misses in the last 3 months. We had, in order, you ready? We had a plane slam into a fire truck at LaGuardia, killing two pilots, narrowly missing killing everyone else on the plane because the fire truck didn't listen to ATC controls or the ATC controls. Then last week, we had a A320 clip a delivery truck on a super low inbound landing at Newark. And apparently that is a very dicey landing because there is a major highway that is right on the end of the runway, and these big jets don't have a lot of extra runway to deal with, so they've got to put it down really close. And the wheels and the wing hit the truck and a light stand. Luckily, the plane was unaffected. It still landed. But the guy in the truck, who almost died but didn't, was shook it up, to say the least. Well, last night we had something else that I couldn't believe when I saw the headline. I said, wait, what? A Frontier Airlines jet had to abort takeoff because it hit a pedestrian on the runway at Denver. A pedestrian? Who's walking on the runway of an active runway at a major airport like Denver International? What? Apparently this individual had jumped the fence, the perimeter fence, got out into the wild to the inside of the airport. And you would think it was a suicide by plane because you certainly can't miss seeing or hearing the roar or the lights of a jet plane coming at you. Luckily, the plane itself had time, because it wasn't yet about to lift off, to shut down and abort the takeoff. There was an engine fire, smoke in the cabin, but passengers were safely taken off the plane. I would not recommend you look for the photos of one of the engines that struck this pedestrian. I mean, come on. That's enough crazy when it comes to commercial aviation in the last 3 months. Also, Delta, you Grinches. Delta has said they are no longer serving free snacks and beverages to economy passengers on flights less than 350 miles. This starting on May 19th. Delta had the Biscoff wafers, which I think stink. Southwest has delicious Maui Monk pretzels, which I would often beg for multiple bags of. United has the goat of the free snack, which is the Dahlman Stroopwafel. Give me a Stroopwafel. We'll see if they start cutting back on those. Come on, airlines. Live a little. Quick break, hour three, coming up next at Sports. Hour three of a fast-moving Sports Sunday here on The Fan. We're out of here at 45 this hour for Nats baseball, but it's been a good ride so far. We're waiting for the NBA lottery today at 3 o'clock in Chicago. It'll be on ABC, also on the ESPN app if you're out and about today. And then we've got the doubleheader today, starting at 3:30, Knicks and Sixers from Philly. As the Knicks try to close out the Sixers in a sweep. New York minus 1.5 today, in case you want to dabble responsibly, of course, with your wagers. And then tonight on NBC, Spurs and T-Wolves. And when it comes to sports, I've found over the years that it's the mothers who are the glue that make it all happen. It's the fathers who live vicariously and obsess more about the wins and losses. Not that the mothers themselves don't also care about their kids' success, but, you know, they're more the glue that keeps it going. They're the ones that make sure that your uniform is clean and ready for game day. They're the ones that make sure to get you to practice and back. They're the ones who quietly do all the fundraising for your little league team while you're out there playing. And so for that, I decided I had to call my mom today on this Mother's Day in order to thank her for all her years of supporting me and just walk down memory lane a little.
Hello.
Mom, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I have to go in the house. I'm in the porch right now, and I'm in the fly zone.
The fly zone.
Talking about the state of airlines these days.
I know.
I can sit there and read the numbers on the plane. Sometimes they're lower than ever. So
I know they fly. That's okay. They fly right over Ashby Ponds out there in Ashburn.
That's right. Absolutely.
And I gave you the I tipped you off on the FlightAware app, in which you can actually, if you're just bored, pull up your phone,
right,
and then click on the little airplanes as they fly over, and you see exactly what type of aircraft, what carrier, where they're going, where they're coming from.
I know. I used to do it all the time. I haven't done it in a while. It's very very interesting, I must say. And they come in at this particular route seems to be favored by United Airlines because I can read the tail.
Yeah.
And once in a while they take off and go the other way, and that's when the wind is coming from the south.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway,
we don't need to get bogged down in that. I've got for us today, Mom, my five. This is unofficial, but my five most cherished sports moments growing up, in order. Okay, number five is you signing me up for bowling leagues every week at the McLean Bowling Alley. God, I loved to bowl every week. That was so fun.
It was fun, and I ended up being the secretary who had to keep score. You know, there were no machines. You had to do it on a paper and pencil. And your sister was in a little stroller because she was only about 3 months old, and she just slept through all the noise.
And you know me, Mom, if you didn't keep score, if it was just a funsies league, I would have said, I would have said I'm out. I would not have wanted to do it. You know me, because I'm the score keeping kid. Tell people how you used to know who was winning or losing in T-ball. When I played, what was the key tell as to who was winning or losing? Go.
It was, you, first of all, you were the only guy on T-ball who had white baseball pants and socks and a t-shirt. All the other kids were coming. I mean, what were they?
Jeans.
Six years old.
Yeah.
Jeans, shorts, whatever. No, you had the outfit and you played on the pitcher's mound.
Even though there was no pitcher, but I was right there, front and center.
Front and center. And there you were.
You could tell when our team was.
And they didn't keep score, except you kept score in your head. And all of us, I'd see you crying. And I thought, oh, shoot. They're losing, and he knows it. Nobody else knows it. They're just having
Why is Stephen crying? A good time. Why is he crying? Yeah. We're not even keeping score. Well, he is, and right. clearly yeah. knows they're now losing.
Okay. And other mothers in the stands would say, is he okay? I said, yeah, he just knows you're losing. Okay. We're losing. Right. Oh, gosh.
All right, number four, top five mom moments growing up. You driving me and Chip Gladson to go play golf at Goose Creek Golf Course in Leesburg, which from our house in McLean was a good 45 minutes each way. And this was when we were 13, 14 years old, so we couldn't drive ourselves. I mean, that was a commitment. That was an hour and a half for each trip. You drove us out, dropped us off, drove home, and then came back to pick us up 4 hours later.
Right, I did. You know, you wanted to play and you were really hot to play golf. And I thought, well, you know, keep them happy, keep me happy. And out we went. Now it's only about 10 minutes from now where I live.
Well, and also, they built houses on the course, Mom. So the course is no longer.
Oh, I thought it was still there and they built around it.
No, they built right on there. And whoever developed that land made a mint. Obviously,
yeah,
given real
estate. Yeah, but the street sign still says Goose Creek when you go over it, so I guess the creek is still there.
Yeah, the creek's still there.
Yeah.
All right, number three, top five sports related moments with my mom on Mother's Day. You making me a yarn net for my Nerf hoop because the string net that Nerf hoops came with would often get tattered, torn, and completely ruined. You were able to make a yarn net, and I spent countless hours bouncing around my room, shooting the Nerf ball, bouncing off the bed, slamming into the closet doors. Mm-hmm. That was a great net you made.
That's because that was better than the other one. I made it out of good yarn, and I'm a good crochet and knitter. I don't know whether I knitted it or crocheted it,
one or the other. I think you just like tied it together, but you had to What do you mean, no?
I had to make it.
Well, yeah.
I knitted it, yeah. To look like a net.
Right, but you had to look at how a basketball net is put together, the way it intertwines. Oh, sure. So,
yeah,
this was a custom deal. You couldn't buy this. There's no Amazon in 1978.
I know. Yeah. That's for sure. That's okay. What I did.
All right.
I had to keep you happy and out of my hair.
Okay. You know? Number two, top five mom moments. You lining up at 7 a.m. at Hex.
Oh, God.
Ticketmaster at Hex in Tyson's Corner to secure bullets. Spurs game 7 tickets at the Capitol Center, because that was the only place you could get the tickets, was at a Ticketmaster, which was literally a closet in the basement of Hex Company.
Hex. I do remember that. I don't remember who played or why, but you really wanted to go to that game, and where you had to go.
Well, it was Bullets Spurs. It was George Gervin, the Iceman, against Alvin Hayes and company. It was good times. 1978, I was 10 years old. The basketball team was good. Let's hope they're good again. Let's hope they win this lottery today at 3 o'clock.
I heard that. I was listening to you this morning. I heard you say that they had the – good pick. So I don't know. I don't follow basketball as much as I follow football or baseball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then the number one most cherished sports moment growing up, without a doubt, whole family on the couch, 4th and 1, Pasadena, California, January 30th, 1983. Rigo off the left side, poor Don McNeil getting dump trucked on the way to a go ahead touchdown. And the first Super Bowl championship in franchise history. The whole family erupted off the couch. What a moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely thrilling. You never forget things like that. Everybody feels good. They're excited. They're happy. They're screaming and yelling and jumping up and down. And it was really, really special. There's nothing like a sports team at home winning the big prize. Oh, nothing like it. And that was the first time. And I don't know if we'll do it again, but yeah. I hope so. Well, you know.
Let's hope so. We shall see. So you love watching NFL games. You'll often like text me after a big Sunday night or Monday night game going, right. Oh, my God, did you see that game?
I know.
The NFL knows its product is very strong with women and all age demographics. Tell me, Mom, why do you love the NFL so much?
I like the mathematics. This is going to sound strange. Because the older I got and the more I watched, you realize how it's like a ballet, the way they make plays and where this guy goes and the other mm-hmm. guy goes and whether, you know, he caught it or he should have, you right. know, there's a lot of that in the, and then when it succeeds, you know, you're just thrilled and it's always different. It's always different.
Yeah, that's the thing. That is the thing right there, is that there's always some wild outcome or wrinkle that comes up right. in an NFL game. You know, basketball yeah. and baseball. You know, in basketball, somebody hits the shot to win the game. Okay, fine.
Right.
In baseball, somebody hits a home run to win the game. Okay, fine. In the NFL, the quarterback fumbles. The ball gets kicked in the air. Some running back picks it up. Weaves 30 yards for a touchdown when nobody thought that would happen. And that's how the game gets won. And there's right. infinite combinations of those kind of outcomes right. in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There is. And there's different players that come and go. You know, somebody gets hurt and then somebody fills in and turns out to be a big star after that. I mean, it's never the same. And it's always thrilling to me. I mean, not always. Sometimes you get a dud of a game, but
sure.
99% of it is just thrilling. Yeah. And that's why I love it. And yeah. it's kind of slow. I love baseball when I'm attached to a winning team.
Right.
I grew up a Brooklyn Dodgers fan when I lived in Brooklyn, and that was the big baseball love of my life.
You said as a schoolgirl you would go to matinee games. For the Dodgers.
I did. We took my sister Rita and I went on the trolley. And
this would have been 1956 or something like that?
Oh, earlier than that. Probably.
Not in the 40s, though.
Oh, no. Not 52, that old.
I know. But it was the 50s.
Yeah. It was the 50s, the late 50s. We lived in Brooklyn. Probably didn't own a car at that point, and we really didn't take it. You know, you took the train or the trolley. And we took the trolley. It was probably 25 cents, and then we went and got cheap tickets and sat in the upper level. I remember one time my sister was standing there, and she was kind of a troublemaker at that time, and she had a drink in her hand, and she said, "What would happen if it spilled over the railing?" I said, "Well, hold on to it and don't want to know what happens." And she said, "Well, I know. I want to know." So she spilled the whole damn drink on purpose.
On a player?
Yeah. No, on the people in the stands. You know, and it's like, I could have killed her.
Aunt,
I said, "What are you doing?"
And Rita did that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
She did. Yeah, my little sister. Well, not my little sister. But my sister, yeah.
Well, younger but than you.
The one thing you haven't mentioned about moments in your sports life was how much you love golf, and you would take the lawnmower and make a big circle in the front lawn
yep.
that looked like the green.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you go across the street to the Gumps, our lovely neighbor, whose house was kind of on a little hill, and you would take the ball and you would hit it over
wiffle
to the
balls.
Green.
Yes, I would hit wiffle balls because it was only about 20, 30 yards total across
right.
the street. But yeah,
right.
hit wiffle balls, and I had an old ski pole that I also made you stitch a small little flag for.
Oh, no. You didn't. Debbie McKnight, our neighbor friend.
Oh, she did.
Made that flag. Oh, yes, okay. She did.
That,
yes.
Was beyond, that was beyond your expertise. You could make a Nerf hoop net, but not a flag.
I wasn't a sewer.
Okay.
And
okay.
You would get more enjoyment going across the street on and hitting those balls there.
Well, I was just glad. I was just glad, by the way, that the Gomps didn't chase me off their yard. Like, they could have easily said, "Hey, what are you doing taking divots out of our yard?" I really didn't mess up their grass.
I know.
But, you know, a lot of homeowners would be like, "Hey, kid, get off my lawn."
Yeah. We had a nice neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
And there, another thing that your golf involved was your sand trap. Yeah, it came. I was working, teaching school. Came home from school one day and can't get in the driveway because there's this ginormous pile of sand. Mm-hmm. And your buddy Alan Abbasi came around the side of the house with the wheelbarrow, and you're right behind him with another wheelbarrow, and you just hands up. It's okay, Mom. Stop. Dad knows about it. It's okay.
Well, Dad bought. You didn't know this. I had lobbied Dad to buy a truckload of sand because I had dug a hole in the backyard on our third of an acre so I could practice sand shots. And I was working him. He finally went to some, you know, construction supply place out in Sterling and got a truckload of sand to be delivered.
Uh-huh.
And you didn't know anything about it. And
no,
couldn't
I didn't.
Get to the garage, and I enlisted Alan to help me get it all down to the, to the bottom. And it was great. And there's a picture of that sand trap somewhere. I've got to find it in the archives.
Yeah, there is. But you enjoyed that sand trap, and I just, you know, parked in the street and said, okay, Steven's at it again. I guess I have to go in the house and he'll get rid of the sand.
Yeah.
And he did. Yeah. You guys cleared the driveway.
We were motivated. We weren't like, we'll get it tomorrow or next week. It's like, Mom is pissed. Get it out of the driveway.
Yeah. I wasn't pissed. I was just.
I know.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
I know. Well, you know, and the irony is, Mom, my sand game now has never been worse. I've got some things going on. It's a disaster. But that's a whole different story. Whole different story.
That is.
Well, Mom, thank you for a wonderful childhood. Giving your kids a childhood that is wonderful, safe, and cherished is a gift that never fades, only grows over time. And I'm eternally thankful for it. I'm so glad I'm going to see you in literally about an hour and a half.
Thank you. And thank you for being you.
All right.
Okay. You guys are good.
All right. I love you, Mom. Thank you.
Love you too.
All right.
Bye.
There you go. So there you go. When I say growing up on the mean streets of McLean, now you know a little bit more. There was some hardship to be had in McLean Hunt. Not much. Solidly middle class. But still, it was wonderful growing up. If you're with your mom today or grandmom or anything like that, cherish it because it's priceless. Quick break. We're back with more on Sports Sunday after this. All right, Sports Sunday coming to a close quickly here at about 45 after the hour. There is so much still out there that I could and have wanted to talk about, but time is running short this morning. But there'll be much more after today's lottery to discuss. You'll, of course, tune in tomorrow morning for the Junks, and they will start you off on your day and on your week, and the rest of the shows here will dig into what the Wizards may be thinking. At hopefully 1/1, or if it's 1/2, or 1/3, or God forbid 1/4. Let's just win this thing, for God's sakes, okay? Be done with it. Netflix is going up in price. I know. You're like, what? Streaming plans? Raising their prices? I've never heard of such a thing. Here's a headline from CNBC. With Netflix's new ad-free standard plan at $20, streaming's tipping point into old TV is getting closer than ever. Streaming services are increasingly valuing subscribers based on how much they watch, not just what they pay, as advertising turns viewing time into measurable revenue. What's interesting is that for me, I look at it like it costs what it costs. I don't love it, but I'm not going to be denied a game or an event that I want to watch based on a couple bucks a month. Now, this was 2-3 price hikes ago. There will at some point, even for me, come a point in which I'm saying, no, not doing this. Then what are my options going to be? The other side of the equation is equally daunting in that none of these streamers, none of these standalones, including Peacock, which has been very aggressive in acquiring all kinds of rights to all kinds of things, even they are very much in the hole at this point. They're hoping to turn the corner, to bend the curve, to finally get enough altitude to be just break even, and then hopefully profit. You know the whole meme on the internet, step one, step two, question mark, step three, profit. Okay, it's the step two that is flummoxing people. In March, Netflix raised prices for the second time in just over a year, pushing its standard ad-free plan to around $20 a month versus ad-supported at $9 a month, signaling just how much a subscriber watches may matter as much, if not more, than what they pay up front. It's a double payday, said Kevin Krim, president and CEO of EDO, a company that measures the impact of advertising across streaming and linear TV. As long as the ad tier subscribers engage with the content and the ads, they will be at least as valuable or more than the ad-free subscribers. We could be heading towards a hellscape in which not only are we paying per service for a fragmented slice of what we used to get in bundled cable, not only paying a monthly for that slice of it, not all of it, but having to sit through ads as well. There could come a day in which they say, you know what, there's no more ad-free price. You're all watching ads. Now, that would probably drive a lot of people to just stop watching. But I'm not so sure. Of course, in sports, we're already paying for Netflix, Peacock, Paramount Plus, etc. And we're enduring ads because, well, sporting events have timeouts and breaks between quarters. So they're going to show us ads. Even if they could show us not ads, it wouldn't be any value to us as sports fans because we know the action goes, the action stops, we take a break, come back, there's another play, there's a challenge, there's a timeout, there's quarters. You know, we've already become accustomed to that. I can't imagine watching television, though, like shows in which there are ads. But that's how most people watched the iconic series Breaking Bad, with ads, week to week. I saw a couple repeats of Breaking Bad, which is easily one of my favorite shows, with ads in it on some, you know, cable channel. And I was like, oh my God, I couldn't do this. It takes you out of the world. What Vince Gilligan and the writers and those who directed the show did so brilliantly was it immersed you, the viewer, into this kind of grimy and weird world of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and being part of a meth operation. Dumping you out to a Tide commercial kind of breaks that spell. But that's how people watched it. I didn't pick up on the show until it was literally over. And I finally said, all right, now that Breaking Bad is over and everyone's been harping on, you got to watch it, it's so good, I guess I'll give it a shot. And I was hooked pretty much early on. Illinois spent $20 million on a new video scoreboard. It's the largest in college football. It is the Jerrytron of college. Illinois, you heard me right. Illinois, which is a non-factor. They're not an awful program per se, but they've never been on a big stage. Not in the Big Ten. Now, maybe they'll be the next Cinderella school like Indiana. How about another I school, a big old capital I school coming up and doing good? Well, they're investing in the program. $20 million for this Jumbotron at Illinois. It was paid for by a donation. Imagine, and I don't think Illinois has done it yet, but they may soon. Imagine you are on tennis scholarship at Illinois and they close the program. And you're sitting there going, well, glad they got a $20 million Jumbotron for when our football team gets boat raced by Northwestern. Great. The flow of money and the emphasis on football and to a lesser extent basketball continues unabated in college athletics. We'll see where it goes next. Quick break, final segment on a Sports Sunday, Mother's Day 2026 here on The Fan. If I told you who this was, you wouldn't believe me. But maybe you can tell by listening.
Mother, there is no other like mother, so treat her right.
If you guessed Lawrence Tiro, a.k.a. Mr. T, singing this Mother's Day song, I don't know who wrote it. Ring-a-ding-ding. Yes, this is a real thing, and you got to see the video. It's even more funny.
Eat where she stood, making sure I had something to eat. Tea is for the time that she stayed up night and took my temperature when I wasn't feeling right. Eggs is for the heart.
Every now and then I say to myself, okay, turn around. You've reached the end of the internet. And then I see this and I go, oh, whoa, 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 there's more to see.
And I called when I stayed out late.
Mr. T and his Mother's Day song. What a banger.
Mother, there is no other like mother. So treat her right.
Yeah, treat her right indeed. Welcome back. Final few minutes here on Sports Sunday here on The Fan. As always, I remind people, if you want more of me, you can listen to my podcast, The Zabe Cast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter or X at Zabe, Charlie Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. I got some stats for you. First stat is involving the Lakers. Lakers are the first team in NBA history to lead at the half in back-to-back playoff games, but lose both of them by a combined 40 or more points, which kind of tells me that OKC is just taking their time, playing with their food, playing cat and mouse until it's time to get down to business, and then they are leaning in and dispatching of a Laker team that, let's be honest, without Luka, they had no chance. What they've got is an interesting collection of parts with the ageless wonder LeBron James, and to think they were going to beat the defending champs in a best of seven, I mean, come on. They made it interesting for a couple of halves, but it looks like it's all over. That's stat number one. Can that be right? Is that right? It's correct. Here's the stat. A player in baseball could get a hit every game. By the way, that's a great thing if you get a hit every game. Just one. A player in baseball could get a hit every game for 26 straight seasons and still not beat Pete Rose's record of 4,256 hits. Let that sink in just a bit. That's why they called him the Hit King. And he went to his grave, sadly, not a Hall of Famer. Despite many years, they're like, let him in. Come on. He's done his time. It's only right. Got to do right. Never happened. Pete Rose, though, unbelievable. Lucky Strike is accused of building an illegal bowling monopoly. And if the lawsuit succeeds, well, then you may be part of a class action rebate for one quarter of your shoe rental at your Lucky Strike if you've got receipts, because who doesn't keep bowling receipts? through the years. Lucky Strike Entertainment has been accused of building and buying up all these bowling centers to build an illegal monopoly. To which I say, well, okay, maybe. But a lot of these bowling alleys, they're mom-and-pop type operations. They may not be run very efficiently, and there could be money walking out the back door. It could be not properly maintained, or could be dirty, or have unsavory people there. What's wrong with one dedicated operator saying, hey, people love to bowl, like I told you with my mom earlier this hour, so let's buy these alleys, let's run them correctly, let's make some money, give a nice clean experience to customers. Well, that'll be for a judge and a court of law to decide. Happy birthday to Chris Berman of ESPN. That's right, Boomer. He is the longest tenured on-air personality at the four-letter Connecticut sports channel in the Connecticut Woods. 47 years. Berman will be part of this year's ESPN Super Bowl, and his contract extension he signed last year will take him through, God willing, his 50th anniversary with ESPN, due to happen in 2029. Got good for Berman. I have softened my stance on Berman over the years. At one point, I believe he was being jammed down our throats. It was too much Berman. The nicknames were too cutesy and tortured, and you're just like, enough already. Why? Why, Tommy? But Chris Berman is the soundtrack of many of our best sports-loving years. And good for Chris Berman that he is so liked and so beloved by the company and has got that loyalty. They don't really need him. They don't barely use him. But it's like they want to have him. They want to have him as this marketing hook for 3 years from now when the network turns 50 years old to be able to go, and look, we still got Chris Berman. He's back again for his 50th year. Some of us in this quixotic business end up getting bounced for reasons you didn't see coming. You don't understand why. Other guys get a great situation like Berman where they're just so liked that the company's insistent on keeping you around. I didn't know Georgia had become North Carolina when it comes to vehicular misbehaving in college football, but apparently that's the case. Headline, UNC professor calls on school to, quote, rein in Bill Belichick's football players. It's bad enough they had a losing season in Belichick's first year. It's bad enough that his Yoko Ono-style girlfriend, his child girlfriend, is got her thigh-high boots all over the program and whatnot. Lombardi is a joke as well as their, quote, GM. They had no players drafted this year in the NFL. The NFL's 33rd franchise, well, that's laughable. Now, their players are menacing the community in their cars. This story from the New York Post, the off-field actions of Belichick's Carolina football players have started to raise alarms at the university, according to a new report. One player has been cited at least four times for speeding, two of which include reckless driving charges. Another was cited three times for speeding, including an instance where they allegedly were driving over 100 miles per hour, according to WRAL. The player's car has also been photographed in on-campus parking spots marked for individuals with disabilities. Oh, that is a gigantic karmic no-no. Are you kidding me? The professor has said players have parked in spots marked with people with disabilities, sped through narrow parking decks, backed into unauthorized spots, and have cursed at him. He said, is there no one who can rein these players in? Probably only a subset of the football team who are tarnishing the reputation of our school and of all Carolina athletes. This was the letter Professor Pfeiffer wrote to Bubba Cunningham, UNC's athletic director. Cunningham wrote back saying, I don't know how many more times I can apologize for these conduct issues. Bill, get on it, buddy. Get off your child girlfriend and get on this problem. And for an athlete, are you serious? You don't feel in your bones the wrongness of you as an athlete parking in a handicapped spot? Come on now. All right, I forgot. Is my out at 30 or at 55? Oh, good. I got some time to spend then. You going to play some music on the out? How is your Mother's Day going to go, young Wesley, in our final
20
seconds
of the show? It's going to go well. After the show, we're going to go have some kind of a brunch, lunch type of thing. But she'll be happy to see me.
Some mimosas, some brunch, some noshing, some good times. I had a good time today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Sports Sunday right here on The Fan. Have yourself a great Mother's Day, and we will see you next time.